For great-looking t-shirts, hoodies, and sweatshirts, the TNT Shop is now open at tntradio.live. Instead of a shovel and pick to dig deeper, Darren Denslow has his iMac G3 and rusty magnifying glass so he can dig deeper for the real story. This is Digging Deeper with DD Denslow on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to TNT. This is me, DD Denslow, on Digging Deeper. I've just spent the last hour speaking to English football legend, ex-England footballer, and a man who scored 47 out of 48 attempts from the 12-yard spot. Interesting fact. And also somebody who's been very prominent and done an excellent job in highlighting the harms of the COVID narrative and now vaccine injuries, and is a very prominent movement of the truth be told protest movement, in which they are highlighting some of the harms that this medical product has done. Okay, coming up in roughly 5 minutes, I've got Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. I remember Dr. Sherry being a prominent Twitter account and one of the very sort of first people to be warning about and speaking about the harms that these medical products that have been forced upon us have done. So I'm really, really looking forward to Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, who will be joining me in about 5 minutes. Now, in the last hour, I was talking about the WhatsApp messages, how the media are very much focused on the fact that the journalist broke a non-disclosure agreement and not actually focusing in on the content of some of these messages, which confirmed that our governments have been deliberately harming the public, locked us down when they didn't need to, put us in masks when they didn't need to, shut schools and took schools, children out of schools when they didn't need to, and all the other insane restrictions, and the money that they printed and spent was completely unnecessary. And the argument or the narrative that the mainstream media are pushing is that this was incompetence by our government. In fact, the messages, the way they seem to be framed, is that exactly that. You know, Boris Johnson can't do maths. That's why we had the problems we've had for the last 3 years. But when you look around the world, you find that there are other stories or other scandals occurring in the mainly English-speaking world that are, or the Western world, that are similar. And one of those in the USA, and I'll be asking questions about this in a minute, is the confirmation that the virus was man-made and came out of a lab in Wuhan, not a wet market. And that is the origins of the outbreak. And I've got a story here from the Sunday Times. It remains remarkable that the ground zero for the COVID-19 pandemic was none other than the Chinese city of Wuhan, the world center for the study and storage of exactly the type of coronavirus that caused the outbreak. The city is thousands of miles from the area in the southwestern province of Yunnan that have been identified by scientists. This is a likely bat virus breeding ground for COVID-19. Yet all of the 662 cities in China, it was in Wuhan, more than a two-hour flight away, that the first case emerged. By far the strongest link between these two areas is the Wuhan Institute of Virology. For the 16 years leading up to the pandemic, teams from the institute have been visiting remote caves in Yunnan, hunting for coronaviruses carried by bats that might be infectious to humans. Now, there are some people who consider this story as 100% confirmation that the conspiracy that's about 3 years old that I first heard reported by Paul Joseph Watson, that the virus came from a virus lab, a bio lab, a bio level 4 lab in Wuhan. And that seems to make sense as opposed to the wet market. The problem is this story is now everywhere. It's in every major mainstream outlet, in every newspaper. It's being pushed as confirmation. We've got the head of the FBI and the head of the CIA and the head of MI6 and whoever else all coming out saying, yeah, we always knew it came from a lab in Wuhan. They're not giving any reason why
they weren't saying this at the beginning of the outbreak, because that might have been very, very helpful information. And it has to make you wonder and question, just like honorary Plumovian Pat Hennison is doing. He's saying, is it really come from this lab? Was it out in the public sphere before? Was it the sports events, the military games that were being held also in Wuhan or very near to Wuhan, where there was a bout of sickness that may well be attributed to COVID? What is the story with this particular scandal, and why is it coinciding with the WhatsApp message scandal in the UK, or the scandal in Italy, or there'll be scandals in Canada and Australia, all related to giving information to the public about what really, really happened? And I'll be bringing this particular story, as well as the issues surrounding the vaccine, with my next guest, who's about to join me any minute, Dr. Sherry Tenneypenny. So if you have any suggestions for a possible guest or host you'd like to hear on TNT Radio, or perhaps you have a topic you feel we should discuss, then we want to hear from you. Simply complete the suggestion form on the TNT Radio website. Help us make a difference on TNT Radio.
News you can count on.
They break down the big story.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to TNT. This is me, DD Denzel, on Digging Deeper. And I have, well, I can't see. There seems to be a camera issue, but I know you're there. Sherry, how are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining me. Maybe you could just tell the listeners who don't know who you are, and I expect most of the informed TNT listeners do, who you are and what you are about, Sherry.
Okay. Well, I live in Cleveland, Ohio in the U.S. I am a board-certified physician. I have been studying, publishing, and speaking about problems associated with vaccines since September of 2000. I've given hundreds, if not thousands, of interviews. I've got lots of presentations I've done literally all over the world. And so when the COVID shot came along, it was just a natural extension for me to move into that arena and start talking about it. And in the last 3 years, I've done well over 600 interviews talking about that they're not safe. They don't keep you from getting sick. They don't keep you from being in the hospital. And now we know unequivocally that if you've had two or more jabs, you have an increased likelihood of getting sick with COVID, and you have an increased risk of dying.
Yeah, and they're still, well, they're not really pushing it. Now, I don't know what's happening in the USA with regards to the COVID vaccines, but in the UK, they've been very, very quietly withdrawn from the market. And that's exactly the same what's happened in, say, France, in the Scandinavian countries quite some time ago, actually began pulling these vaccines. What's happening in the USA? Are they still really, really pushing these vaccines for people to take?
Well, they are. And what they pulled off the market was actually the AstraZeneca shot, and J&J stopped producing theirs. So Johnson & Johnson stopped, and it was AstraZeneca that quietly pulled it off the market. And that was the primary shot that was being used throughout the UK and throughout Europe. But here in the U.S., Moderna and Pfizer are full steam ahead. In fact, I just read an article yesterday. It was talking about that the U.S. government has just purchased another 93 million Pfizer shots for the next round of boosters that will be coming over the summer and going into the fall. So they're not relenting at all in here in the U.S. They aren't even really admitting that they're a problem, even though the information is now irrefutable of the types of problems that these shots are causing.
Okay, yeah, I mean, you've mentioned the AZ, the AstraZeneca. Actually, in the UK, it appears all of the COVID vaccines, all of them, whether it's the Pfizer, Moderna, the AZ, the only ones that really were distributed here, they have all been pulled from the market. And we're actually starting to see that everywhere. But they've done it very, very quietly, without much fanfare. The average person walking around who's probably had two or three shots won't be aware that these vaccines have been taken off the market. Are you expecting that to happen in the USA, particularly as there is issues with excess death rate, fertility, and so on and so on? Are you expecting to see this happen in the USA, or are they just going to continue pushing?
I haven't seen any indication so far that they are stopping the requirement. In fact, I believe that the U.S. is one of the only first world countries that still requires visitors that are coming in from out of the country, if you're not a U.S. citizen, to still show proof of vaccination. Even though our southern borders are wide open and we have tens of thousands of people walking across every single day or every single week with no proof of vaccination, no proof of anything, except that they just are moving into the U.S., but people coming from Canada or the UK or Europe or Australia. And now, even if you're coming from China, you have to have tested proof of having a COVID test before you come into the country. The politics here surrounding this shot is just messy, just very messy.
And you've still got the vaccine requirements. So people still need to be vaccinated against COVID to enter the USA. Is that correct?
Yeah, isn't that despicable? I think that's just despicable.
I think it's crazy, but it confirms that Russell Brand, who's just been in the USA doing a load of interviews, he's had at least two shots of the jab. So that tells you all you need to know. I was looking at your Twitter feed this morning, Sherry, before I had you on air. And there was something that I noticed on there. It's just a statement. I think it might be on your Substack. They have been practicing the script for decades. What does that mean? What do you mean by that?
Well, I wrote a book back in 2005 on the bird flu. It was H5N1, and I was writing it in real time. So as the story was unfolding, I was putting this book together. And there was a thing that came out from the CDC by a Dr. Nowak that was actually the title of it, was the seven-step recipe for getting people to get the jab, get the flu shot, and demand it. So I wrote that up in my Substack. I do a Substack once a week. It's called Eye on the Evidence. I produce it on Saturdays. Then on Sunday, I produce one. It's called On Walking with God, a little bit lighter and a little bit more spiritual. So it's sort of more inspirational. But I wrote this up because I'm using excerpts from the book that I wrote in 2005 to show the parallels 15 years later, that it's the same playbook, different virus, different scenario, different, more powerful people that are pushing it. So I wrote the seven steps out, and then I showed that it here in 2020, this Dr. Nowak did in another presentation using the same steps and talking about pushing people forward and talking about vaccine hesitancy and how we have to overcome that so that we can get everyone to have this jab. So it's the same playbook, different story, different point in time, same playbook, different virus as we're moving this forward. I've done a whole series of these actually on my Substack, and it's been very popular, and people are really appreciating the fact that this isn't something new. They like the historical backdrop. And once you have the historical backdrop, it puts things into context more, because you know the expression, if you don't learn the lessons of history, you're going to repeat them. So this is just a recycle, rinse and repeat. And they're going to keep doing that over and over again until we recognize it and say, enough already, stop.
Do you think they've pushed it too far this time, though? Sort of jumping ahead and where I want to be in the conversation, but we're here now. Do you think that they've pushed it too far, and actually they've woken so many people up that they might not ever be able to do this again in terms of a virus, a pandemic, and the subsequent vaccine cure?
Well, we would hope so. I think that part of the problem that, you know, so many of these people at the upper levels of government and globalist and where they sit at that level, they are so disconnected from the boots on the ground people that just live their daily lives. They have no idea what a day-to-day life is in a UK or an American or Canadian or Australian citizen. They just don't know. And I think that they completely underestimated the resiliency of the human spirit, that they would not be controlled, shut down, and eventually the truth would come out about the myth of the masks, the fraud of the PCR testing, the nonsense, and the danger of what these shots are actually doing. And eventually the medical community would kind of wake up and get it and start connecting the dots. I think they really underestimated the fact that we would fight back. You know, their whole expression about you will own nothing and be happy. And I think they really believed that. And now that they're finding out it's really not so true, I think that they're backpedaling and kind of in a quandary. Like, how can this possibly be? We were setting things up to be so wonderful for all these little slaves, and then none of them want it. And they're, you know, they're meeting this a couple months ago at the WEF, where the president of Moderna said, we've got all these shots and nobody wants them. We can't even give them away. Nobody wants to have them at all. And I think that, you know, people finally are putting together, they're pinning the dots together. I think it's more than waking up. I mean, there's people who are aware of the things that are going on, but they don't want to admit that their government was out to kill them, and that their government is creating something called democide, which is a step beyond genocide. We use that word genocide a lot, which actually means the death of a particular set of people. Like, we could genocide to the Jews during World War II or the American Indians. But democide is death of everyone by government policy. And that's what we're seeing.
Okay, that sounds like a really, really good place to start a conversation after this break that's coming up. So please stay right with us. I'm going to start talking about democide on TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Chris Smith.
The world, though, is a fool for seeing this carnage between Russia and Ukraine in black and white terms. It's not black and white. There is no outright baddie, as much as there is no outright hero. The truth lies somewhere in between. And for mine, it's beginning to reflect very poorly on this actor-come President Vladimir Zelensky. I detest Vladimir Putin, but hear me out. We are nonchalantly heading into a second year of more horrific destruction with no end in sight. Whatever it takes, says Joe Biden. The defense secretary says, whatever it takes. How much will you spend? Whatever it takes. Well, sorry, but Zelensky's as hawkish as anyone in this fight. And his latest promise was a vow to defeat everyone. Everyone? Hang on. Even with NATO's support, there's no certainty he can defeat Russia, let alone everyone. Why would he say everyone unless he's getting carried away with his own self-importance? And yet, what's the world saying? Off the back of ignorant prompting from Western leaders, oh, we're on Ukraine's side and Russia will surrender. Well, as my late father Norm might say in these circumstances, pig's ass, Russia will surrender.
Chris Smith on TNT Radio.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
If you want the jibby jab, all right, enough. Then you've come to the wrong station. We mandate that the truth be told. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to TNT Radio. You're with me, DD Denzel, on Digging Deeper. I'm here talking to Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, who I can now see, which is great. And she's got a wonderful background.
What happened?
Mountains and trees and lakes. And if you must know, Sherry, literally, just quickly checks phone. Yeah, as soon as I get off my radio stint today, I will be going somewhere that looks very similar to your background for a walk. So thanks
good.
For bringing that to me, because I love the outdoors. All right, let's talk about something that's not quite so happy. We were talking about democide, or you brought up democide. I'm just going to rewind the clock back a bit. You were talking about the flu jab. Are vaccines in general, are they necessary? And have they been the great wonder cure, great piece of technology that mankind has invented that they are sold to us as? And in particular, I'm interested in the flu jab.
That's a great question, because that's something that I've pretty much dedicated the last 22 years of my life to. In fact, I'm not exaggerating when I say that I've spent over 50,000 hours studying this in 22 years. It's almost like if I see patients in the office one day a week, when I'm not seeing patients and I'm not sleeping, I'm studying stuff that has to do with vaccines. So I say that for the sake of your audience, to say that I didn't just wake up one morning and go, gosh, maybe this isn't such a good idea. I've spent a lot of time reading this, and I've come to the conclusion no vaccine has ever been proven to be safe. None. None of them are effective in the way that we describe effective. Effective, the way that we would understand it, would mean that it keeps me from getting sick. And none of them, including the flu shot, MMR, pertussis, any of the childhood vaccines, any of the COVID shots, you can still get the shot and still get the illness. So they're not effective. They're not necessary. The people that are out there that are unjabbed, unvaccinated, the children who've had no shots at all, have been shown in multiple studies, they were small, that they are very healthy. They're not on chronic daily medications. They're the healthiest kids that we know. So they definitely cause harm. I mean, now we are seeing the death rate through the roof of these COVID shots. In fact, the last time that I saw real published data about that was in October, where it said that there were more than 20 million people who had died from the jabs, and more than 2.1 billion people around the world, by estimating from multiple different databases, that had been injured from these shots. We know that in the United States, more than 1.2 million deaths have been reported from these shots. And so it's... they're not necessary, none of them. And somehow we bought the Kool-Aid 200 years ago. We got a multi-generational indoctrination that says that by somehow injecting foreign matter and chemicals and cow blood and chicken parts and all the things that are actually in the shots, somehow by injecting that into our children, it somehow makes them healthier and keeps them from getting sick. I hope that one of the things that's happened by people now investigating these COVID shots and understanding the death rate and the cause unknown and all of the different blood clots issues, they're now starting to question the entire paradigm. You know, when we were under lockdowns during that 2 and 3 year period of time, people, believe it or not, continued to have babies. They had children, but they didn't go to the doctor. The doctors weren't seeing them, or they lost their health insurance, or for whatever reason, they didn't go. And now those children are 2 and 3 years old. They've had no shots at all. And the parents are looking at them going, wow, they don't even get so much as a cold. They haven't had an ear infection. They don't have asthma. They don't have eczema. And now they're going to have a second baby. Their first one is maybe 3 years old, and now they're going to have another one. They're like, well, maybe they don't need any of this stuff. And the powers that be and the people in the public health department, are their heads are spinning about, they don't know what to do about all of this vaccine hesitancy now. And I think that one of the gifts, and I call it one of the gifts of COVID, is that people for the first time are challenging the government. They're thinking for themselves. They're not just genuflecting to their physician, another human being in a white coat. And they're saying, I know a lot more about this than this guy or gal does that claims to be a doctor. And I am not going to do this to my children or to my family.
I think that has been... So that brings me to the next question then. So, right, they've pushed this massive narrative on us over the last 3 years. It's woken a load of people up. People have stopped getting their children vaccinated at a very, very early age. If I had children again in the future, obviously not me personally, I'm a man, but if I did, then I would almost certainly be
That's another whole discussion, right?
Yeah. We could talk about that, everyone. I love the trans issue and all that. I don't love it. I hate it, but I do quite like talking about it. And if you must know, it's why I'm not a teacher in the system anymore. I'm a chemistry teacher by training, because of the trans issue. But yeah, if I had children again in the future, I definitely wouldn't be recommending or pushing or having my children injected with anything unless it was absolutely necessary. They've created a world full of anti-vaxxers, something that was a fairly small minority, to now, particularly if those statistics that you said about the number of people injured, 2.1 billion people injured by the vaccine, that's 50% of the people who've had a COVID shot. Do you think they've created a world full of, or a much bigger group of anti-vaxxers? And if they did, they must have known. There must have been some smart people saying, this is our narrative, must have known that that would be an outcome. True?
Well, I think the first part of what you said is true. I think that they have created an entire world questioning these paradigms. All of them, the myth of the mask, the fraud of the PCR testing, the nonsense of these shots. And now they're, like I was saying, rolling over from just questioning the COVID jabs into questioning the entire paradigm. But I don't think that they anticipated that. I agree with you that they're very smart people. We're not dealing with a bunch of dummies. And they have access to the smartest people in the world. They can buy anybody. They can buy any database. But I really think if you go back to the beginning of 2020, when people first became extraordinarily aware of the World Health, of the WEF, of the World Economic Forum, and their massive website that had to have taken years to design, you know, you push a button and all these things kind of connect and light up. If you really analyze it, somebody had told me early on that they had nothing in that entire milieu to accommodate for failure. That they really felt that this was a done deal. Everybody was going to roll up their sleeve. They were going to be welcoming the transhumanism movement. They thought that being part of, you know, Meta and all these different things were just like the coolest things ever. Who wouldn't want to be a microchip slave? And so I don't think that they, I really think that they're in a quandary. They don't quite know what to do about all this blowback. Like, how did this happen? How did we mess this up so badly that people don't want to do this? So did they create a whole bunch of anti-vaxxers? Yes, and I think it's about time that we stop calling that, that using that label disparagingly, but using it more proudly.
I mean, I'm actually using it as a compliment to anybody who's listening to me now. However, as a teacher 4 years ago, I would have poured cold water on you for saying that you're an anti-vaxxer. I would have considered you a bit nuts to be an anti-vaxxer. And I'm one of those people who've looked at that group of anti-vaxxers, those horrible conspiracy theorists, with a bit of scorn. And now I am a member of that group. I would never let her have a vaccine under any circumstances now.
I really love that one of the things that Elon Musk has said, which I'm not so sure he's such a good guy. He's sort of a mix of a good guy, bad guy. One of the things that he said was that all of the conspiracy theories that were ever floated on Twitter have found out that they are true. And all of the conspiracy theorists, because remember, that's a CIA label. It was contrived by the CIA, and it was labeled, put people into that label to negate them. But now when people look around, well, gee, people were talking about these things 20 years ago, you know, like I talked about in my Substack, at least since 2005, probably before that. Every conspiracy, quote, air quote, theory that we're talking about has all turned to be true. And I think that that is what's turning people's heads more than anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm one of them. I spent years studying the conspiracy theories, and I just had exactly a similar conversation with my previous guest, Matt Letizier, about I spent all these years, but I didn't believe they were true. I thought there might be some truth to them. They were just fun little fantasies that I indulged in because it was better than watching a soap opera on British TV. Never watch soap operas on British TV, Sherry. They're honestly, they're just mind-numbing. So we said we created this group of anti-vaxxers. Their narrative has stalled, or they knew that they would be in this position. Yeah, one of those two has to be true. Either they've completely cocked up, or we knew he was going to create all these anti-vaxxers. That was part of the plan. Does this make the people who have been pushing these narratives very dangerous? Let's just say it's stalled because they've got up to a point of, oh, it's not working anymore. And we need to continue with the plan, and we don't really know how because we've got this resistance. Does that make them dangerous? For example, in the UK, there are jobs being advertised and probably awarded for the UK's largest vaccination program ever through the NHS. So what we've just experienced wasn't that, wasn't the largest vaccination program ever. That's something that's coming. Should we be worried about that? Because people are going to say no. They may get physical and forceful with us, not just here, but worldwide.
I do believe it makes them dangerous, more dangerous, because they have to continue with the plan. They can't take a step back and go, oh man, darn, that we had no idea that shot was going to be that deadly. And even and now and change course. So it's kind of like a caged animal. I mean, when you've got an animal like a tiger or some wild animal, and you've got them backed into a corner, and they become even more dangerous moving forward. And I think that that's kind of where that is. It's just a very tenuous situation. And so that should be encouraging to the rest of us to stay the course, because the more that join in to the resistance movement to say, no, we're not going to do that. Yes, they will get more heavy-handed. And yes, it's going to get worse, probably worse before it gets better. But in the end, if we stay the course, stay together, and don't start shooting each other in the back, you know, we will win this. We really will.
So just quickly then, touch on the vaccines. We're going to move away from the vaccines because I've looked at your Twitter thing. You've got the Ohio stuff. You brought up the trans stuff. So I'm probably an immigration. So I'm going to probably ask you these questions because you're across the pond. One argument is that I've heard, and I'm a conspiracy theorist, so I'm quite proud of it, is that they are actually after the unvaccinated. So they've vaccinated everybody. We've got this group of unvaccinated people, and they're going to release a virus that will only attack the unvaccinated. This is my conspiracy brain thing working. Do you think that's going to be the case in the future, that one, Bill Gates and his ilk are going to try again with another pandemic, and that if we're not unvaccinated now, we could be at danger or at risk from that? Because we're the non-compliant ones.
Possibly, because they really do have an issue with all of us non-compliant, you know, resistance people that have not just gone along to get along. So, but think of what they've done already. They tried the monkeypox thing. That failed miserably. Now they're threatening the Ebola thing, and that's going to probably fail. The only thing about Ebola, and I think it's important for your listeners to know this, is Ebola is a type of virus, is the name of a virus in a family of viruses. The family name is Marburg, the Marburg hemorrhagic viruses. Ebola is one of them. And what it does is it causes people to bleed. It makes them not clot. And they've got these stock photos they've used for 20 years of people with blood coming out of their eyes and their ears and their noses. And I concern a little bit that if people were put to their knees over a flu virus, which is what a coronavirus is, you know, are they going to suddenly be all by the fear mongering thing again and go, oh my gosh, I've got to go get this shot? And then I think they will say something to this effect. I don't have any proof of this, but this is my theory, that they will say, oh, well, we have a shot for Ebola, but it's in limited supply. And we're only going to give it to people who've had the COVID shot and are fully vaccinated with the COVID shot. And then we can give you this Ebola shot. And so that will push a sizable portion of people who will buy the fear again, because they've learned how to crank that. It's like a rheostat, you know, crank up the fear rheostat and turn it down and crank it up and turn it down. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping that your listeners and people who listen to this in the future will know that that is their primary tool, is fear. And if you just don't buy into that, everything will be just fine.
I mean, you're right. The monkeypox, they pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed. I used to watch it on my Twitter, just monkeypox. And I was watching, you know, my column, all these tweets coming through, and it went from hundreds a minute to just a little trickle because people weren't buying it. But if they push something in which people were bleeding out on the streets, dying, and they got all the scary images around, I think people would revert to the training that they've been through over the last few years and just slip back into wearing a mask, socially distancing, locking themselves away. Do you think that what actually we've experienced with this non-dangerous COVID virus is a training exercise, a simulation, not just for a training exercise for the public, and a simulation for our governments in preparation for the real thing?
Yes, absolutely. That's absolutely. It's gotten people. It's like Pavlov's dogs, you know, that you hear the bell and they ring the bell and they salivate, you know, that whole story. And so people are like, the fear mongering thing. And here's the thing, the Marburg virus is the number of people who have actually had a hemorrhagic virus that actually had some bleeding and had those things we talked about. I've read several places it's been less than 1,000 people in the entire world that has had this infection because it can be treated by vitamin C and ozone. I mean, there's a drug that you can get over the counter here in the U.S. It's a parasite drug called fembendazole. And that can treat Marburg 2 doses and it's gone. But they're never going to tell you that. It's just like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. They'll never tell you how that really did stop COVID in its tracks. Well, there's drugs and vitamins that can do the same thing with these Marburg viruses. So it's the visual thing. It's how they use the media. And I would just really encourage people to know that if you're afraid, taking a pharmaceutical product like a shot is not going to make you unafraid. It's not going to take away your fear. And if anything, we've seen all of these shots now are causing more illness, more death, more damage, infertility, myocarditis, all these different things. And so I hope that people will realize, you know, fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, don't let it happen.
Uh-huh. And that's exactly what a prominent social commentator, and he works it's in the mainstream, but he said exactly the same. Neil Oliver, you may have come across it. Fool me once, shame on me. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Okay. I'm going to change the subject. We're going to move away from the vaccines because this morning, Sherry, and I don't know if you should know, you're in Ohio. Is that right? Cleveland, Ohio? Is that where you are?
Cleveland, Ohio.
So you've just had that horrible train accident that was in East Palestine, which they burnt off all those chemicals. Actually, this morning, there was another train derailment in a town or a city called, wait for it, Dalt Springfield, which did make me laugh because I think of all the Simpsons predictions. What's going on with all these train derailments? Is it just me from afar going, wow, they have a lot of train derailments in the USA all of a sudden? That's a bit weird. Or is it actually quite commonplace and it's being amplified over here on this side of the pond?
Well, they say that there's about 1,000 train wrecks per year in the US. And I don't really have any way of verifying whether that's true or not. But if it is true, that's a real problem. And instead of sending $123 billion to Ukraine, maybe we ought to use $100 billion to fix our railways here, you know, in the U.S. But this explosion and then burning off all of these chemicals, and we've had just a massive, massive amount of rain here, which instead of snow, that's again, it's kind of the weirdness of the weather. I'm in Cleveland, Ohio. We generally get, you know, feet of snow, you know, like meters of snow every year. We've had really none. We had a little bit of snow around Christmas and there isn't a snowflake anywhere, but we've had lots of rain. And so I just saw this morning that there's, it's so flooded over in East Palestine that now they have, dams that are giving away that were holding back toxic chemicals. And now it's flooding into the Ohio River. And the Ohio River then flows into the Mississippi, which then flows into the Gulf. Yeah, yeah. And then there are multiple, we've had here in Cleveland, 3 huge explosions in the last couple of weeks of big factories that just blew up for no apparent reason. So it's really part of, so when you talked about are the powers that be going to be more violent and are going to be more aggressive? You know, when you think about they've got seemingly this big target of 2030 that all these things need to be happening. We need to get people off their land. We have land confiscation. We have poisoning and contaminating of our food supply. We're killing off the chickens and cows and contaminating the soil. I mean, I got a call the other day in my office. It was so sad. It was this woman who said she lives 12 miles from ground zero of where they burned all the chemicals in East Palestine. And she had a completely 100% organic farm, everything about it. They had chickens and cows and milk and all that stuff. And now the soil is completely contaminated forever. And so they've just lost everything. And I think that that's kind of what we're going to be seeing because they want to push everybody into these 15-minute cities. Mm-hmm. You know, have everybody be in these cities and we, the Economic Forum, the United Nations, will confiscate the land, kind of like what's happening with the farmers in Belgium and, you know, in the Netherlands. You know, they're fighting back because they're saying, no, this is our land. And that's what we need to keep doing is continuing to see what they're trying to do. And somehow we need to eliminate these politicians. I don't know how that happens with our court systems everywhere being so despicably corrupted. But somehow, these people who are making these decisions, they've just got to go.
Yeah, eliminated is a word that I would like to use. We don't promote violence of any sort on TNT Radio. I've got to say that.
We need to vote them out. We need to arrest them and put them in jail. We need to do something to get them out of a position of making rules and regulations over our lives.
Yeah, I don't know what the solution is politically to the decision makers. But the problem is you remove them from Congress and the Senate, or you remove them from the House of Parliament or the French Parliament, the Aussie, wherever, you get rid of Trudeau and his cronies. There's always still a permanent establishment. You know, you mentioned the Ukraine war. So I think of Victoria Nuland as somebody who is a member of the permanent establishment, unelected establishment that works behind the scenes that can never be get rid of unless maybe we eliminate them. Maybe we should eliminate them Terminator style. Anyway, I'm just thinking.
At least round them up and put them someplace where they can't be causing so much damage, right? Just like them up and put them into the FEMA camps, into those camps that they think that all of the general citizens are supposed to be in. We'll put them in those camps.
Or we could evacuate East Palestine, can we? We could just evacuate all of East Palestine and say, hey, you can go and live there with the vinyl chloride and the acids and the organic compounds that have polluted potentially all of Ohio forever and anything downstream.
And don't forget, it's in also Western Pennsylvania, because East Palestine, you know, Ohio and Pennsylvania are side by side there. And so where that is close to the Pennsylvania border. So yes, the explosion happened in Ohio, but from there east, you know, Pennsylvania, upstate New York, all of New England, that big plume cloud of chemicals went in that direction. Yeah. The acid rain, all of the stuff that happened with the hydrochloric acid just has gone up our entire eastern shoreboard.
Yeah, and now you're telling me that Ohio's experiencing some flooding, or East Palestine has experienced some flooding. I couldn't think of a worse natural event to come on top of that man-made event just to exasperate everything and spread those chemicals and get it into the soil and the groundwater afterwards. Horrifying. Okay, we're going to a quick break now, Sherry. And then when we come back, you mentioned immigration. We have a massive immigration problem here in the UK. The numbers are insignificant compared to the numbers that you're experiencing. I'd like to know what your experience of that problem and how it's affecting the USA. So please stay right with us on TNT Radio.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
Equity, equity, equity. If the left is allowed to continue this racist effort, it'll be a major contributor to the end of the United States as we have known her. And it poses obvious dangers that the left, the media, and most on the right have decided not to discuss. We should strive to make sure that the best and the brightest succeed and attain positions that affect us all, whether it's in government, the military, in the cockpit of our jumbo jets, in the operating room, or in our courts, where the accused depend on the attorney sitting next to them to help assure they get treated fairly. The latest lowering of standards comes from Delaware, where the state's top court has lowered the score required to pass the bar exam. According to Reuters, the court said that the changes include reducing the cut score on the exam. The number of essays is also being reduced from 8 to 4, along with the number of possible topics. Why? The court cited a report that claimed that the status quo may be a roadblock for people from underrepresented racial and ethnic groups who may be qualified to practice law in the state. In other words, equity. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
It's not a texting the wife seat, a scrolling through your playlist seat, or a taking a call that could be your next job seat.
Hello, Mark's Plumbing.
It's not a replying to the boss's email seat, or a school letting you know about your sick kid's seat. It's a driver's seat. If there's someone or something that needs your attention and it can't wait, pull over first, because no one's driving if you're distracted. A message from the Government of South Australia.
I heard President Biden keeps the nuclear codes in a folder on his desktop called Miscellaneous.
Come on, man.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to TNT with me, DD Denslow. We're here for the last 13 minutes as we go into the 2 p.m. mark in the UK. I'm here talking to Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. We were just talking about Ohio. We've been talking about vaccines. The other major issue that seems to affect everybody at the same time, must be these coincidences keep piling up, is immigration. We have no borders to speak of, even though we're a small island here in the UK. People can just rock up on their dinghies and they'll get a 5-star hotel, free food, free everything. Is this a similar situation in the USA where there are people literally just coming in unhindered, illegally, which is a crime, and then they're getting looked after and spoiled, whereas the indigenous Americans, people who've always been there like yourself, seem to be treated like a second-rate citizen?
That sums it up. 100% summed it up. And it's absolutely happening here, too. And, you know, down across the southern border, which would be Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas, it's a really big problem. And they're actually just now they're picking them up in buses and taking them to other states and just dropping them off. And when they can get a green card, they can get a passport, they can get a voter registration card. So, of course, they can go in and vote, even though they may not even speak English. So, yes, it's a similar problem. It's really going to be devastating for our countries. I watched a video yesterday. It wasn't a video. It was something on Twitter. It was a series of screenshots about what was happening in South Africa because of their immigration problem and because it's gotten so violent. And now all of their public services are basically shut down and defunct in terms of like the sewer systems, the water supply. Nobody is paying any attention or upgrading their nuclear power plants. They're just not being kept up. And so it's like everything is just falling apart. And when I read that, it was really quite frightening. It was something in Zero Hedge that had published it. And so it's a good reference of where it came from. And I was thinking about the UK because, you know, I have lots of friends there. And I was thinking about America because I live here. And is that the plan of letting all these people in to just absolutely degrade and destroy our countries?
I have to think that that is the plan. I have to assume that is the plan because I look at the consequences of uncontrolled, unmitigated immigration into my country, and the numbers are, you know, we get through in dinghies on inflatable boats rocking up at Dover across the most dangerous stretch of water on the planet, the English Channel, because of the shipping lanes and everything that go through it. We're getting maybe 1,000 a week. Okay.
Wow.
But that's in inflatable dinghies. That doesn't. So, and we get about 60,000, predicted 80,000 a year just through dinghies arriving at our port. In the USA, you're getting 250,000 a month coming through your borders. And what I'm experiencing or what I see happening in my country is that there's an increase in rapes. There's an increase in knife crime. It's costing us an absolute fortune. We're changing our culture to suit these people. Oh, no, this statue was offensive to somebody who comes here from Africa because it's a picture of Sir Francis Drake, a national hero, or whatever, you know, a statue. Are you getting the same sort of problems coming into your country in terms of crime, sexual crime, and crime in general, knife crimes, murders, but also is your establishment really, really sort of seems to be quite focused on these people, and it's affecting your American culture, which I know is very different to English culture because of the nature of your multicultural society anyway. But what are you experiencing in terms of the negatives of this influx of people?
Well, I'm sure that that's probably true. It's not really my issue. I don't follow it really closely. And because I live in Ohio and not the southern border, I don't have the experience of it firsthand, like people that would live in Texas and places like that. But the whole woke culture here has really changed everything. you know, and like, you know, for example, Texas has always been a very strongly Republican, you know, pro-gun, pro-life, you know, the reddest of red states here in the United States. And now everybody's leaving from the blue states like New York and California and Washington, but they're bringing all their wokeness and all of their transgender LGBTQ things all the way to Texas. And so all my friends that live in Texas, they're like, you know, we have this big influx of Californians, but the problem is they're bring or from Washington State or wherever. But the problem is that so many of them are bringing their ideologies with them. And that is what's really changing the cultural landscape here, in addition to the unrecognized immigrants that are really causing a problem.
Yeah, and I've literally just got a message. Big shout out to Jock in the live chat. He's not actually my big. He's not. I'm not his favorite TNT radio host, Bernie, because I don't talk about some subjects that he wants. But he has stated another slavery monument statue to come down in Edinburgh, I think. And it's not a slavery monument. It'll just be a statue of a famous English hero from a day or days gone by. You brought up
those sorts of things, because they've done a lot of that here in the U.S. too. Pulled down, you know, those big bronze statues of people that are of historical consequence from 200 years ago. It's sort of like this whole reparation thing, you know, of 400 years ago. I mean, I have a lot of Black friends who say, yeah, my family, you know, they weren't slaves, and why should I be getting this money? And here's the analogy that I always like to use, Darren, that I think is really good. Let's say that 200 years from now, if the planet lasts that long, they start saying that every single person at that point in time who owned a cell phone, and they start saying all these horrible things about the how they had to be made and child labor and all this other stuff that created a cell phone, and they wanted to destroy that part of history that we're living now, because 200 years from now, cell phones were made out to be horrible things. Well, it's like going backwards 200 years ago and saying what was happening in the culture at that time that was a normal, usual, and customary thing. We have to destroy all of that because it was so bad back then.
Mm-hmm. And scrub it out of the history books and pretend it never happened. Exactly. And pay, you know, you mentioned reparations. I would just like to remind everyone, the British taxpayers stopped paying reparations in 2015 after we paid off all the slave owners to release all the slaves and then marshaled the seas, the seven seas, to try and protect and enforce these anti-slavery policies that the British government implemented back then. Okay, you also mentioned the woke stuff. I have to go there. I meant, because the trans stuff actually I find even more sinister than the stuff that's happening with COVID. I don't understand the need to force young people to change their sex. How prevalent is this sort of narrative in the USA? I ask because the UK is 6 months downstream culturally from the USA, news-wise, comes here about 6 months to a year later. Or is there being a sea change in this trans narrative, LGBTQ narrative?
Interestingly enough, somebody just posted it on my Telegram page, on my Dr. Tenpenny Telegram page this morning. It's a picture, it's a chart, and it says extreme amounts of LGBTQ propaganda have led to a 15,000% rise in castration and gender clinics for children. In 2007, on this map, there were actually two. Looks like one was in maybe Maine, maybe Connecticut, and one was in Virginia. And now there are hundreds all across the country. The mutilization and maiming of children, it's the most, there's a lot of despicable things going on in the healthcare industry right now. All the doctors that are continuing to push the jabs, that were refusing to look at the injuries, even myocarditis that's just been so published so heavily. We've got this whole set of physicians who are just for money because it makes tens of thousands of dollars. I mean, it's a really expensive thing. Taking these young children and mutilating them. It's horrifying.
It's disgusting, and I can't understand, even for money, why people would ever want to push it. And I personally believe that this leftist attitude towards children and the transgenderism in particular, and the pedo stuff as well, might be the thing that actually breaks the back of the woke, this woke narrative that we all live by. Do you think it might be the hill that actually they die on because it's affecting children and the parents?
Quite frankly, I hope that's correct. I hope that it is the thing with the pedophilia, with the human trafficking, with, you know, the sex slavery things that's still going on, which is kind of interesting. We just spoke just 2 minutes ago about reparations for slavery. We still have slavery. We just call it sex trafficking now.
Yeah. Or legal immigration in the UK, because all those people who come up, arrive at Dover on a dinghy. Yeah. When I go to my Just Eat, which is like a food app, and I order some pizza or some Chinese, it'll be one of the people who arrived at a dinghy 6 months ago that'll be delivering it to my door. And I say that not tongue in cheek. There's a serious point. As much as it sounds like I'm being a bit sarcastic, there's a serious point to that. We're draining these countries of their best people, bringing them over here so they can deliver food to my door, or to some wealthy MP or politician to their door. Sherry, it's been amazing having you on. We're coming to the end of the show now. I would like you, if possible, to finish on a positive note. So tell the wonderful TNT listeners something positive, something to hope for in the future.
Well, a little positive self-promotion. If you want to find out more about me and my work and what I do, go to drtenpenny, T-E-N-P-E-N-N-Y, drtenpenny.com. But I would say stay the course. You know, one of my good friends, Todd Callender, says the most important things we can do right now is say yes to God and no to everything else. Just say no to all the nonsense. Just continually saying no. Passive resistance by just refusing to participate is how we're going to win. I think we just really need to stay the course. Find your tribe. Find the people that you would want in the foxhole with you. That's your tribe. It's not necessarily your blood relatives. But just stay the course, because we're gaining ground.
We are gaining ground. We have slowed them up to an almost standstill. There is hope for us yet, Sherry. I've got a message from another. Oh, this is a message from Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. You're so fun. I'm hoping that's directed at me and not the studio. Great. Everyone else, stay with us on TNT Radio.